Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 376. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, Kevin. How about yourself?
Yeah, cannot argue. As usual, I have packed in plenty of WWE content prior to recording here. Between Monday night and SmackDown on Tuesday. But we are choosing to start with, well, a topic that is near and dear to our hearts instead. That is something interesting going down with TNA in one format or another. And I think Jeremy summed it up best. Like, I'm not sure if I should admire Dixie Carter's tenacity to stay in power as much as I wish she applied that tenacity to actually making a fresh product or something for people to want to still go to. You know, it's been under her jurisdiction for quite some time at this point. But the only thing that she seems to know how to do is to hold on to power, and that is, it's kind of impressive. Hello?
Yeah, it is pretty impressive. I mean, yeah, it's the way that they've, she has held on for this long. I mean, There's almost no that they should have held on for the last 2 years since they lost Spike, but by God, they keep trucking on. And with Dixie in charge, by any means necessary.
Yeah, and that any means necessary Yeah, that seems to be...
That is starting to catch up.
Yeah, I mean, that really seems to be the main crux of the reporting also. Like, and I mean, I guess I felt like it was something that we kind of covered when we talked about it with Jeremy also. Where it... even though they recorded Bound for Glory, you just knew that there were too many problems swirling, and the fact that there's even more that have dropped since that episode just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, almost every day something new comes out about the trouble that Dixie has gotten them into, the hole they're dug in. I mean, I believe that when we did our show before Bound for Glory, where we were doing our eulogy of TNA that just still isn't dead yet. I speculated on the total value of the debt somewhere in the neighborhood of $1. Now it is more than, it's got to be more than twice that. Maybe even three times. Fight Network and Arrowlex are owed.
And you throw in the ugliness that there seems to be some type of personal loan between Billy Corrigan and Dixie Carter. Come on.
Yes, that's where I might very well tell that TNA, the organization, doesn't owe Billy Corrigan a dime.
Dixie
Carter personally.
Yeah, that's kind of a funny little part of this whole thing. And I mean, I think it's pretty, I think all the main news has come from the Observer, really.
Yeah. All the main news has come from the Observer.
And
everything we at least two major lawsuits against them. Actually, maybe it's three lawsuits now. I'm trying to
Well, Billy Corgan has the one correct, and the state of Tennessee has another. It was also interesting. Huh?
And then their old production company is owed $250,000. Now American Express Travel Department is owed, or whatever American Express calls their travel, you know, their corporate travel plan or what have you. I don't have it in front of me right now. They're owed about $250,000 now. And I'm starting to realize that, you know, if this thing goes bankrupt, you need to be listed as a claimant in a lawsuit in order to have a claim on getting any of your money back, pretty much.
Yeah, and that does not always happen. I will speak with experience on that front. Not personally, but within the condo association, there are some people that we were not close enough in line for money. So we just kind of lost out on unpaid condo fees. I mean, some of these companies still just might be completely shit out of luck depending upon what happens.
They might have. Because to get your money back, the company has to sell all of their non-liquid assets. Of course, the company doesn't have liquid assets either, but they have to sell buildings anymore. That came out a while ago, that they were actually kicked out of space they were renting in Nashville. They may have never actually owned a building in Nashville. So they don't own any. This company doesn't own any real estate. They've already apparently given or sold some of their tape library to the Fight Network, who's probably going to have the big, no, probably has the biggest claim on that. That's the only, that tape library is the only asset they have. What else can you sell?
And there was already the interesting point, too, that they already restructured once from, and I can't remember the two different names of the companies, because it went from, like, TNA Properties TNA to, like, Impact Entertainment or something.
Yeah, something. Impact from TNA Entertainment to Impact Ventures, I believe, is the change of who they made.
Yeah,
maybe that was to hide from the state of Tennessee. But that apparently things don't work that way either. So,
It seems like it works, but it's from my reading of it is that it works, but it's a temporary patch kind of a situation. Where it just kind of buys you time. Which, again, is part of her tenacity that I guess I have some admiration for.
To put it bluntly, if she is just waiting, if she can just, you know, run down time until, I'll say, her dad dies. And she gets her inheritance, and then she can just play with her toy for the rest of her life without any concerns. Maybe that is her end game.
It's
trust
possible.
Just wait for.
And I mean, it was already kind of funny that they were mentioning how at least what they have recorded right now, outside of a. Also, spoiler alert, if you don't want to hear this, you might want to stop listening for some portion of the show, but I'm sure that you've read this at this juncture, too. The Hardy Compound show is the only thing that isn't filmed at this point through the end of the year. And they were talking about how they have a payday from a couple of cable carriers. Come the new year. So, I mean, she's even still trying to, it's buying herself more time again to try. And I mean, I don't know why she thinks that more time's going to help outside of your speculation.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she just wants to hold on. They still have to record the Hardy episode. It may end up being two episodes because they might try to squeeze a Christmas episode out of the Hardy compound as well. I don't know where they're going to get that money. They've got talent that contractually is obligated to be paid. They're supposed to be like 2 days ago. And so this month, anyone declare themselves a. So, yeah, they got a lot of problems here. And just trying to hold on to this thing as long as possible. I mean, they should have sold to Toby Keith years ago. There was no reason not to take that deal. But they didn't. Because it would be that Dix would not power anymore. Nor would she get to play bad authority figure on or version of Stephanie McMahon on TV anymore. And we couldn't have that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's really, again, like, that's her demise, too, is that she just didn't do any of it well. Like, she didn't, I mean, I guess I didn't ever think of her, yeah, actually I did think of some of her promos as offensive because of their poor quality.
She's never been good.
yeah. That's why I was about to say that she'd been at least okay, but I'm like, nah, she wasn't even okay. Like, not really at any point. Like, I guess it was one of those I went back to and I was like, oh, that's right. I just really liked the way she looked. And knowing that basically her poor character is cause for decline, in my opinion. you know, that you can only dress that up so much. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that leads back to the first point. Like, she just doesn't want to give up power, like, and she is doing any and everything to stay there, and it's just crazy. Like, there's no reason for it. She doesn't have a track record for this. Like, it doesn't even feel like it's one of those things where, you know, if you think about, like, the starving artist who's up and coming and thinks that, like, he just needs, like, that one break. Like, she's had the breaks. She's been on bigger networks for years at a time and hasn't taken advantage of it. You know? And
they've had so many opportunities that have been squandered. We went over some of them in a few weeks, and I'm sure once the dirt's right being buried under the ground, we'll do a big show. We'll get you, me, Jeremy. Maybe we'll get Shahid. Hell, maybe we'll bring right back on Dusty and Eric, and we'll all have our wake for TNA. But where we can talk about everything from the history of this company. But they've had so many opportunities, so many things that blown. You know, and as long as they still had Spike TV, there was still a chance. There was always a small chance, even towards the end, in the later years on Spike, there was always a chance as long as you had that big of a network behind you. They lost that, and they lost a much worse deal on Destination America, but at least that one's still paid. And then now we're on Pop TV making no money. I mean, I don't know where Pop TV is at. I don't know what value they put on that Thursday night, right?
Oh. Yeah, and I mean, that was another thing that in the avalanche of bad news. There was the fact that this past week's Impact Wrestling did under 300,000 viewers.
Yeah, and in the meantime, they're losing viewers. I mean, what a horrible time for this to happen, for that to happen. I mean, there is no guarantee. I think they said that deal is up in April. There's no guarantee that they're gonna be reviewed on Pop TV. They could lose Pop TV. What do you do then? Go to YouTube? Buy for 6 seconds a week? I mean, what? I mean, what do you at that point? I highly doubt, you know, any streaming service can put a premium on. Although, gobs of money around, including, you know, $40 million for Chris to stand-up specials for a grand total of about 2 hours. But that's Chris Rock, not even so. But I just don't see anybody money at this product.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I guess that was one of those things that it slowly dawned on me as we started talking about this. I'm like, there's only so much territory to go with this one. Like, we hit a lot of it on the other show. And it's just being now more confirmed in more solid terms how much of a shit sandwich TNA is going to eat. And I mean, they were even talking about possible bankruptcy, which is kind of a funny thing. Like, there is the possibility that she declares bankruptcy and can still stay in power.
Yeah. You know, if she files Chapter 11, I believe that can give her something somewhere in the neighborhood of a year to restructure, as I do the quotation fingers that no one else but you can see. Who's this? But then at that point, where does she get any kind of money? So they have no assets. That's the big thing about going through bankruptcy. I mean, Billy Corker may be the smartest guy in the room if he's owed. If he ends up getting ruled that he's owed money from Dixie Carter's personal bank account, you know, Billy Carter might be the smartest guy in this whole thing.
Yeah, he really could be the smartest guy in the whole thing. And I mean, I guess that was the other thing that was kind of interesting, that was one of the tidbits in there, was that, evidently a lot of the locker room said that they wished he had gotten control. And that was the other part, is that his title of president was pretty much just a title.
Yeah. He was promised that he would be in control for the first run of taping since he was promoted, per se. And no, apparently Dixie Carter and John Gabrick were running the shows, and he was essentially just a figurehead. So it will be interesting to see what comes out of the court proceedings on Thursday. Whether he's able to get his injunction. You know, what exactly was in writing between Dixie and Billy Corgan, and you know, and the parent, and also, you know, the parent company. What was he promised in exchange for putting however much money he put into this company? And at this point, it's got to be estimated that he's in for between somewhere. He's got to be in for at least 1.5 or 2 million. I'd figure at least that at this point. So I mean, what does that get him? What percentage of the company does that get him? What what leverage does that get him? What is in writing? As far as, I mean, is she in breach of an agreement? Potentially guilty of some form of fraud. I mean, all of these things are in play here, and you know, and as we're sitting here, obviously we don't know the answers right now, because a lot of things are going to come out on Thursday. Thursday is going to be like the big day for all of this.
We'll see. Depending upon the possibility of OPA or not, since that's the usual recording night. We'll see. If that does not happen, maybe a special Stunt Granny Audio will be convened. if any good news comes out. But it just really, again, like it all of these reports are just really more confirmation that something is gonna radically change soon. Like, I mean, even if she keeps power and does the Chapter 11 and possibly can still hold on to power, I mean it's still just buying more time. It's not really solving the problem at all.
Right, I'm at a loss. I mean, there's just but not as much of a loss as TNA, of course. Why do you want to hold on to this? I mean, how bad can you fail and then still refuse to admit that you failed? It's absolutely mind-boggling that the situation has been allowed to get this bad.
It's crazy. It is really crazy what you can do.
Who at this point was going to want to do business with these people?
Well, and that was the point that I wanted to bring up that I talked to Jeremy about. Like, I know that they signed before this avalanche of news, but people like Cody Rhodes and Aaron Rex and whatever his real name is, I forget. AKA Damian Sandow. I guess I don't quite understand why they even took the time to sign there.
I mean, Cody was not signed to any kind of a long term deal. Cody's already done, and he might never come back to TNA.
Oh, okay.
Aaron Rex, Damian Sandow signed something probably for, you know, some sort of contracts again. For all we know, that has already been or is going to be breached at some point, you know, in the not too distant future. So who knows how long? You know, there's a guy who's going to have no loyalty to TNA at all. And you know, at this point, I can't see how anyone has any loyalty to Dixie and to TNA at all. I mean, if they're not being paid. I mean, this isn't ECW. This isn't people who believe in who've been brainwashed into believing in a cause. I don't think there's any TNA answer to Tommy Dream or not taking Jack for 6. At least I hope there isn't.
If there was actually I shouldn't say that, just because evidently Matt Hardy's stuff is still great. Oh, and that was, I guess, another funny thing. Maybe to note, my lack of watching TNA product in and itself recently, because I actually did mean to record it this past weekend to just kind of really watch the Death Knell episodes here. I had no idea that Eddie Edwards was the TNA champion right now. I like I'm Eddie Edwards. Huh?
I mean, I don't like it. I guess I kind of like Eddie too, but coming up with the loss, he beats Bobby Lashley. It was just done so poorly. I'm good with Lashley. If you're just going to lose it, I don't know why they just didn't have him lose a DC3, but no, they've gone with Eddie Edwards, and I mean, it's almost not like anything that they do matters at this point. Until they can take the reins of this thing and have some vision. If it's at all salvage.
Yeah, I mean, I guess from the couple episodes I did watch before they moved to Tuesdays, I didn't feel like he was in a spot to kind of move up. And I guess I've always liked him better than Davey Richards, but I still don't like him like championship, like main championship level, kind of like him.
No. And they've done nothing to put him in that. I mean, they pretty much on the last show, his first show was champion, had him get thrashed by Lashley. I mean, in a non-wrestling segment. I mean, spoiler alert. he does leave. He should still be the TNA champion by the end of the year. If they make it through the year, you know, and do a new set of tapings for a year here, Eddie Edwards will be going in as the champion. But yeah, just nothing that I seen on TV or from I remember reading the spoilers makes me think that they're presenting this guy as a strong champion at all. He's being presented as a guy who just lands. And it through title defenses.
Yeah, not exactly the way to sell your new champion, especially when he beats someone as strong as Lashley. And I mean, I can understand taking off the title off of Lashley if he's like, oh, by the way, I have a fight coming up now. I might have to take a month off or something like that to finish
yeah,
training
he's
camp.
I believe he's got a fight this week.
Oh, maybe that's why they had him drop the title then. But that's still a
that's it.
Yeah, that's still a terrible reason. I feel like they've done that before, and I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now.
Right now. But well, Lashley does have has shown the incredible ability to go from, you know, work mode to fight mode within a matter of weeks and come out on top of his fight. So big respect for him there.
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, the site has been very positive about Lashley. Now, again, I haven't seen much of the work, so I can't say that, but I feel like those of you who have been watching TNA have had largely positive reviews.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely a highlight.
So, yeah, there's that. Well, speaking of gentlemen who wrestle both in fake wrestling and real wrestling, other person would be Brock Lesnar. And he was not the man to talk about this week in his impending matchup. His opponent was. That man would be one William Goldberg.
Yep, Goldberg made his return to Money for the first time in over 12 years, and it was quite the moment. They definitely couldn't have asked for a more receptive crowd. They couldn't have asked for, you know, a more, you know, engaged in a more in the moment Goldberg than I mean, he was not presenting himself like he was just here for Peggy. You know, he was in old Goldberg. Goldberg, anything physical, he gave people everything that you would expect from Goldberg and then some.
Yeah, that was kind of funny because I got quite the Twitter browbeating early this morning. Yeah, I guess I honestly, like, if that's the way he was portrayed, I guess I did not really pay attention to that when WCW was happening. And that he was that much of a children's guy. I really whiffed on that, but I mean, it's still, I guess, even knowing that information, it doesn't really change my mind all that much either. Like, I'm looking forward to the match. He did everything he should have in the promo. Just not a big fan. I mean, I guess that's what it kind of boils down to. You know, like, I would have taken Heyman's video feed interview over Goldberg's as far as quality promo goes.
Just all that. We have never been more wrong ever on this show, and that's saying something. Anyway, but no, Goldberg was absolute. Don't listen to Kevin, kids. Strange kids. Don't listen. Don't listen to Grandpa Kevin over here. Goldberg was absolutely phenomenal. Everything he did, I mean, he's never been a good phone interview. He's never been a good actor, even though he's been even in a number of movies. But he spoke from the heart. He believed everything, single thing he said. And that is what made it great.
Yeah, that part I'm not going to disagree with. You don't get choked up like that if you're not speaking from the heart. And you know, even afterwards, he starts grabbing kids out of the crowd and carrying them around ringside.
Yeah,
including his. And I mean, I feel like this isn't the first time either that some guy has come back for his child to see him.
It's a big reason for a lot of guys to come back, especially if they didn't have a family when they were around the first time. So yeah, that's a big part of this for Goldberg. Well, I mean, they've got an empty story here that I just hope they don't. The creative team doesn't feel that they need to get too creative with. I mean, two big bulls who want to fight.
Yeah, I think that they'll leave it alone for the most part. I mean, it kind of writes itself. You know, you don't really, you know, it's another one of those situations where you don't really have a heel and a face in some ways. Just because people still cheer Lesnar, even though he's always positioned as a heel. I guess he's kind of like AJ Styles, too. Where, you know, they just, their actions and verbal skills slant towards heel, but they still get quite the positive reaction from the crowd. I think the crowd might be a little more split once they face off, I guess, than they were last night.
Yeah, I mean, I believe they're only scheduled to be on one the last Raw before Survivor Series together. We'll see what they do there. Toronto will be very interesting because Goldberg is has never been popular in Toronto based on, you know, the kind of this angle where Goldberg hit Bret Hart with a spear and Bret Hart was wearing a steel plate underneath his hockey jersey that he was wearing that night in Toronto at an episode of Nitro. Maybe the last, you know, kind of great angle that WCW ever did. Even though it never really went anywhere. So really, since then, Now, granted, it's been so long, and Goldberg did, you know, and it's such a nostalgia trip for Goldberg now. Maybe Toronto won't greet him with that negativity, but there's still a good chance that this crowd could be pro Brock Lesnar, or more pro Brock Lesnar.
Well, and that was the other funny thing, and I'm not sure if we brought this up or not. Just still the sheer fact that I had completely forgotten that Lesnar and Goldberg got booed out of the building pretty much in their first matchup. And this will be far more anticipated of the two matchups.
Oh yeah. They're right now the way this is being positioned, it feels like the biggest match in a while. And you know, hopefully it's again that they go back and forth with the interviews for the next, you know, for the next 3 to 4 weeks. You know, one guy won't be there, the other guy won't be, one guy will be there, the other guy won't be, and then finally they'll come together on the last Raw before Survivor Series. Be interesting to see if they have them do anything physical that night, or you know, because that's the part where it really depends on what kind of shape Goldberg is in. You know, obviously he's in great shape for a 50-year-old former athlete. I think that you could look at him last night and see that, but even if he didn't have a shirt off or anything, but, you know, being in shape, being in ring shape for a match with Brock Lesnar is a completely different animal, so I mean, hopefully they know what they're doing. Have a, you know, physical match plan, and then you go through with it, and everything works out great. But there is definitely the crowd will be hot for a stare down. But once, you know, once the bell, but at some point the bell has to ring and they have to cut. So, that will definitely be interesting.
Oh, yeah, depending upon the bells and whistles of the match, I mean, I wouldn't think that it's going to be one match that's going to be terribly long. They should be able I guess it'll be interesting. Like, that's one where it would be kind of neat, I guess I don't know what they do. But to have Goldberg down at the Performance Center or something, just wrestling dark matches or something of the sort, or at least kind of being able to get in the ring with another live body. I think something like that would help him, but I don't know if that happens.
In the past, they would send Curtis Axel guest to wherever The Rock was filming a movie, set up a ring in a studio warehouse, wherever they can, and through the paces with them. So maybe they'll be doing something like that with Goldberg, or who knows, maybe Goldberg and Lesnar will meet somewhere in secret to come through the match, you know, do practice, although I've never heard of Brock, you know, being amenable to such things. Brock shows up on the day he's supposed to, and then does his thing, leaves. So I think that will be the way they go with this. But I mean, it'll also be part of the fun of the match, I think. You know, for people from a more, you know, smart perspective to say, or the internet fan to speculate, is Goldberg even going to be going off like what people expect from a Brock Lesnar match? How is Goldberg physically with Lesnar? Is he getting gas out or gas around? Those are things that will go through your mind while the match is going on. I think that should be fun. You should really like this match. It is fight. You know, accomplish that objective. I have this promo, so that, you know, we'll carry that narrative as well. I think that Yes, yeah. As long as Goldberg shows up in good enough shape, they should definitely be able to, you know. It feels like a big fight.
It should be at least a quality big man match. You know, both of them were always Goldberg was still, you know, he was one of those guys, I guess, that really brought an athleticism to a guy his size kind of perspective, I thought. Because it's, you know, Hogan was never the fastest guy. And it would be bad to say that Macho Man didn't bring the athleticism that maybe a Bill Goldberg did. Like, he brought it in a different kind of a way. Like, you could tell that Goldberg was a former football player, I guess. And that just kind of changes how you look at him. But,
right.
You know, yeah, I guess I would hope, and I guess that's what I always think in these situations, like, there's no way you don't set this matchup up without already kind of having done a little bit of a test run with yourself, to figure out the situation. I hope that Goldberg is up to the task, and I think he will be. You know, it's one match. If Sting can work his way through a match, I would imagine that Goldberg should be able to do the same.
Right. Yeah.
And speaking of working your way through a match, on the latest show that I watched, SmackDown Live, I was duly impressed by the abilities of Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles, and James Ellsworth to somehow get a commercial length break match with two longish segments, honestly. That was at least 15 minutes. If you count the commercial break, and it was very entertaining. what they did with that, it was definitely not your traditional match.
Oh yeah, it was awesome. I they did that, James Ellsworth was just awkward enough out there to look like he had no business out there, but then also showed enough, wherewithal to, get to know when to take advantage of opportunities, and that note music spot was that was great. I mean, to get a near fall over the world champion like that, and the crowd totally in it the whole time. Ellsworth chants in the cadence of Goldberg, that was really funny. So that the crowd definitely made that part. Ambrose was funny on his his shtick during the match. Yeah, everything. I like he said himself DQ'd was the perfect finish. And going down 0-2 to James Ellsworth.
Oh man, that was one of the, because I'm like, okay, how are they gonna get out of this one? And because at some point I felt like Ellsworth was gonna win, and I was just like, oh, the DQ. I was like, oh, this is such a smart plan, like. Because, again, like, it kind of helps when the main event talents don't really mess with each other that much. And it's a good way to keep them out of tag team matches with another opponent. Like, it's just a nice way to kind of keep a feud a little bit fresh with and doing something different. Oh, did I lose you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was really booking a third match between AJ Styles and James Lawler. It doesn't look like they're going there. But no, this was a really good way to out of Ellsworth, do something, don't want to use this term, but everyone uses it, but do something outside the box, do something fun, smack down something of a holding pattern between now and Marcel, Raw's start, they really think about Survivor Series until they get past Marcel. It's looking like Survivor Series is going to kind of be something, with Goldberg and Lesnar as the main event. They're gonna have the three Survivor Series elimination matches. I don't know. Look like there may not even be any titles decided at Survivor Series. Like something of a special, special attraction type of show. They've gotta stretch out AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose as long as possible because Cena's gone through the end of the year and Randy Orton's in his own personal hell with Bray Wyatt, which I do want to touch on after we're done with the main event angle. So yeah, I believe SmackDown gets TLC in December, so I do see that them stretching out and Ambrose until a TLC match, in 2 months down the road.
I mean that's the thing that makes the new pay-per-view schedule kind of interesting. Because I would imagine that...
And Survivor Series, they're probably going to end up on the same team, Styles and Ambrose.
I guess that'll be kind of interesting to see. Because they could still include that title match, because just... I guess those guys don't fit in. I could see a couple of title matches and then other five people in the men's and even women's matches, depending upon how they want to work things. But, they haven't really given any clear indication. But what I was going to say is that I would imagine there's going to be times where... both brands get screwed because of this setup of the every other month. Like, I guess they didn't really map it out.
Every other week.
Or every... yeah, but...
Almost every other week.
Yeah, I guess there's probably going to be a time where Raw gets shorted a pay-per-view or has a longer time in between pay-per-views, like SmackDown is enduring right now, I guess. I just haven't looked at the calendar well enough to determine when that might be. Maybe SmackDown is always the one that ends up getting screwed, but I guess it forces something interesting
I've seen nothing past January. I don't know what they're going to do in February. I imagine there's a good chance they'll run the Elimination Chamber in February for the brand whose number one contender doesn't win. I imagine that was in the past, but you really can't call Raw or SmackDown show the Elimination Chamber in February and advertise it and put tickets on sale for it, because that's kind of a spoiler.
Don't worry.
I don't know what they're going to do in March, because we'll figure that all out later, but I'll just kind of write these things in my head. You asked.
I guess it'll be interesting. I mean... It could make if they keep the brand separate, and I don't know why, but I guess I feel like this time around, I feel like that's now getting to be more of a possibility because of how much TV they're producing from this right now. And they just basically need that for the network anyway. So, like, it's I don't think it's anything that's going away this time around. So Survivor Series really does have a chance of being something different, so long as the brand split exists. And, I mean, this year it seems a little, you know, too soonish, but whatever, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason to get all hyped up about it, because honestly, a year from now, maybe it doesn't matter either. Maybe we're wrong and the brand splits over and they still produce a shit ton of TV. So yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens going forward, but it'll still be a lot of wrestling one way or the other.
Yep. Things should be interesting, but I don't know if I've ever seen a wrestler more uninterested and was cutting a promo than Randy Orton just to kick off SmackDown. Oh my God, does he obviously hate this hocus pocus BS that they've got working with Bray Wyatt? Randy's a guy he's a moody guy who has tells when he is not happy with what's going on. I can see it on his face, hear it in his voice. He does not enjoy this storyline one bit.
Yeah, well, this is another one that they really are stretching out.
Yeah, they're stretching it out. I mean, they figured Bray Wyatt. Maybe they think if it's the fall, it's October, let's do some Hocus Pocus stuff. Let's work some horror movie references. Let's bring a casket into proceedings.
Which, well, and I love
kind of interesting in that they're bringing a casket in and making that a thing for Bray Wyatt now, with, you know, rampant speculation that the Undertaker will not be physically either A, be physically ready to have a match at WrestleMania, or B, that he's intended to be at WrestleMania in the first place, and he really believes that his match with Shane McMahon was his last match. So they may be transferring a lot of this dark side and a lot of the dark side gimmick to Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, that kind of killed me about the announcers tonight. They're like, oh, what could this casket mean? It's just like, oh, come on, man. We all know there have been casket matches. Like, you're killing me here. Like, and it always cracks me up, too.
And I
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook group that we have, I was being a little facetious. I mean, you know, I knew that at some point they were going to open the casket up and he was going to be in there. I mean, you know, that's Undertaker angle 101 type stuff there. But poor Kane, I mean, this is what, the third time they've kidnapped him in
Yeah, it doesn't seem to faze him, though.
Since they've been around last year.
He really doesn't seem too bothered. For his third kidnapping, he seems pretty okay with the situation.
Yeah. So yes, the Randy Orton and Kane versus Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper feud must continue, and I assume at some point where they're getting the tag team or a singles casket match in our future.
Yeah. I think that is kind of the obvious theme there. And it's another thing that I hate when the announcers have to sell this garbage. But there is no reason for Randy Orton to be scared with a casket. at ringside. Like, you're not going to die in a match. Well, I mean, I suppose you could, you know. One might argue that there was one fatality in the ring, but that was even before a match, so I'm not sure that that counts. But, I don't know, that just kills me all the time. It just seems like a dumb notion to me that you should be scared of a casket just because it's at ringside. Even if you get put inside of it, it's going to suck to be stuck in there, but seriously, someone's not going to report a felony crime that's on TV?
I mean, The Undertaker has been thrown in caskets many times that had an axe taken to them and then set on fire. Nobody did any of that. That actually happened to him twice. I just thought, you know, you had the casket match Undertaker versus Randy Orton and Cowboy Bob Orton. They just completely ripped off the Rumble, the Royal Rumble 98 finish. Just verbatim, unabashedly. I completely forgotten about that.
Yeah, so even in a storyline sense, what you're telling me is there's no reason for Randy Orton to be scared of a casket. You can have an axe taken to it and be set on fire, and you can still come back to the wrestling ring.
Randy Orton's not the Undertaker. He doesn't have superhuman healing powers. Come on now.
He can turn into a snake and slither out of the box.
No, you're just being silly.
Yeah, I actually don't think snakes can flatten themselves that much. And vipers tend to be a little fat. So, they really can't thin themselves out that much. But, yeah. I don't know. Is there anything more to say about that goofiness? I agree with you. Like, Orton is kind of keeping it short.
Yeah. Orton was just completely. He was just delivering lines, scripted lines, bad on. Obvious. When Randy Orton gets in his moods, he can be a pretty unprofessional. He was certainly that tonight.
I guess I wouldn't really want to be stuck in a tag team feud with Kane, so I'm not sure I blame him.
Kane. He has no chemistry with him. Why have you seen that? They don't. Not even in the ring. They really matter. So, yeah. It's just something he has to get through.
Is there anything else of note that that took place on either SmackDown or Raw? Like, I feel like we kind of got the big ones out of the way. Oh, there's one other big one, in my opinion, that the WWE built up as much as the Goldberg segment. And that was the women's championship match at Hell in a Cell. I think that needs to be covered.
They're definitely with it. I mean, it's definitely veering towards more of what would have been my fears, that it's less about the two women themselves and more about the company patting some back by putting two women in the cell and maybe not in the last match in the main event of the show. I mean, the story of the match is history. And that's it. That's the reason they're going to the hell. That's the reason that they're going to put their bodies through this. That's the reason they're going to brutalize each other is for history. It's held up as ringing hollow. Although I'm sure, you know, when the door closes and the bell rings, they'll have a fantastic match, and we won't be. And none of what we're talking about right now will matter. But a good deal of the build-up right now does feel kind of hollow.
Yeah, I mean, they have different parts, I think, that, then aren't just we're making history, at least this Sasha and Charlotte were making, but a lot of it was just the making history part.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, their feud, I mean, there's two traditional reasons to have a cage or a cell. Either the action has gotten so wild and crazy, they're brawling all over the place, or there's constant interference. That really hasn't been the story with these two, I don't believe. Because even when Dina Brooke interferes, she screws up at least half the time anyway, so it's not like, you know, that's a reason, or even a reason that they say that's why this match needs to be in the cell.
I guess I figured it was mostly because they, it's really the tiebreaker match. Because they had the one title match, Sasha wins, they have the next title match. Oh, no, it's not a tiebreaker. Sasha won two out of three.
Well, if you count the triple threat, we're barely took, and I guess Charlotte's up 2-2, but I don't know if you count that or not. Sure, it's even 2-2. Otherwise, if it's just the two of them one-on-one, then Sasha's up 2-1.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't thought that one. I was thinking it was a tiebreaker match the whole time, or else I wouldn't have been going down that path. But it really isn't. Yeah, I guess I agree with the end of what you said, though, is that once that cell door closes, it's going to be a good match, or at least it should be a good match. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, it won't be for a lack of effort. I mean, that's for damn sure. I mean, depending on the match order, the match placement, will it go last or not? If it goes on last, what do Rusev and Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens do within the confines of the cell and the rules of the cell? If they go in as the third cell match of the night, as they say, what spots are left? what weapons are left to use at that point? How do you utilize the cell itself and the rules and the structure of the match? In a unique way that hasn't already been seen that night. That's an issue with these gimmick pay per views that WWE is from too. It's an issue with Money in the Bank when there's more than one ladder match. It's an issue with TLC when there was more than one ladder match. So, we shall see. I mean, it's again, they will. They're going to go out there to tear the house down. So that we don't have to worry about that. It's just how does it all fit together?
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I don't feel like the WWE has done this to themselves quite as much as they used to with the multiple matches in the same night. But again, I guess with the splitting of the brands and sticking with it, you're going to end up with kind of more themey nights. Because I guess I didn't feel like they did three Hell in a Cell matches for the last Hell in a Cell pay-per-view.
I think last year they only did two.
Two, yeah. I feel like two is more the average. But so throwing in that third one to me is where things get a little tricky.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, the one that goes on last has a little bit of a mountain to climb as far as, what do we do? Which is maybe where putting Charlotte and Sasha on last could be a good thing, because just the fact that there are women in the cell means that it's something different and that's never been done before. So, they might actually benefit from going on last, especially also as well going on last in Boston and in Sasha's hometown. There's no way that the crowd won't be with it. No matter where you put it on the card, I mean, it also might, they'd be, I would say that they have more of a chance of stealing the show from Owens and Rollins if they go on, if the matches before them, than Owens and Rollins have of stealing the show from Sasha and Charlotte if they go on.
I think that the clear cheering choices of Sasha and Charlotte will help. You know, the hometown crowd will definitely pump things up for Sasha. And as much as I like Owens and Rollins as wrestlers, it's still a little bit of an odd feud since Rollins was really just a heel about 3 weeks ago.
Right. Yeah. There's still that. I feel like even though the Owens Jericho stuff is really good, the stuff with, you know, the actual issue with Owens and Rollins feels pretty cold to me. I'm not going to put the blame on Owens as champion. I'm more putting the blame on the wishy-washy state of Seth Rollins' character. He still seems to be in a state of complaining that Triple H and Stephanie aren't cheating for him anymore, instead of, you know, more talk of being on his own man. He never needed them in the first place.
Yeah, he's getting a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. So it's just, and there really wasn't that defining moment of standing up to them. Like, he got screwed over by Triple H.
Right.
But there still hasn't been any real proof of why it was done, or if there was collusion with Stephanie. And it seems to have been something of a dropped subject, really. I feel like even Triple H hasn't been, like, outside of Rollins mentioning him getting pedigreed, like, I don't feel like Triple H's name really comes up even through the announcers.
No, not lately, but, you know, if the ultimate plan is Triple H versus Rollins at WrestleMania, then they're going to have to drag this out slowly, you know. Yeah, so I think that's the issue here, and yeah, I think that the specter of Triple H and the fact that Owens never really got, you know, Triple H won the match, Owens didn't. You know, I think the specter of that, you know, looms over Owens' title reign. You know, I think the Owens, I think, is performing well, you know, for himself, but I think it looms over this feud. I feel like their issue is pretty cool.
Well, I think that we may have gone cold on this episode, my good sir.
Oh, what?
And, you know, I also grabbed a cold one prior to recording. It was the Stunt Granny German Suplex infused with cinnamon.
Ooh.
So that is the Hefeweizen with a little bit of cinnamon in it. It worked out fairly well. I think I need to modify the Hefeweizen base recipe a little bit to make things a little bit better. You know, outside of that, fairly pleased with the effort with both the regular and the infused versions. Cinnamon works out for the Hefeweizen. Can't really monkey with it too much. So, Bell Time Beer of the Week. My own beer. Go figure. So, yeah, for @DeFrango11, that's me. On the other end is @ChrisCalamita. The brand, as always, is @StuntGranny. Go to iTunes, give us a review. If you so like this podcast, that would be outstanding. So, that's it for me. Have a good night.
Later.